Thank you for that introduction. I'm very excited to be here today and to present on behalf of my co-authors at the IMPACT program. There we go. No conflicts of interest? Okay. So I think the first presentation that we heard today did a great job of kind of setting the backdrop for my presentation, so thank you for that. So we do know that sexual minority adolescents are have an increased rate of pregnancy compared to their heterosexual peers. So there have been several large-scale school-based studies, so in Massachusetts, Vermont, Minnesota, also in Canada, that have shown this finding. And I was also glad to see that I wasn't the only one presenting on this topic, because I think it is very important, and most people who I talk about this with are very surprised and don't quite know what to make of it. But we do know, turning to the general literature on predictors of adolescent pregnancy, there are a range of factors that have been identified as related to having an increased risk. So some are poverty or structural, so poor education. Some are individual, so earlier age of puberty or sexual risk-taking. Emotion and behavioral functioning are related, peer relationships and family relationships as well. So for the current study, I wanted to take a look at how these factors that I just discussed related to pregnancy among a sample of same-sex attracted adolescent females. And I broke these into demographic, individual, social support, and LGBT-specific factors, just for ease of presentation. And the sample I used is called Project Q2. It's now the longest-running longitudinal study of same-sex attracted young adults, but I'm actually only going to be presenting baseline data for today. There's 246 participants, 129 female-born, so that's who I'll be focusing on. They were aged 16 to 20 at baseline. The sample is a little different than other samples in that most are urban, racial, and ethnic minorities, so 58% African American, 11% Hispanic, 17% multiracial. And I'm going to go through this just really quickly, but here you can see the demographic and individual level variables that I will be testing and how they were measured. And here's the social support variables and LGBTQ-specific variables. Okay. In terms of the analyses, in a moment I'm going to present a series of tables which will walk us through the analyses. But for the continuous variables, you're going to see means and standard deviations, and the tests that were run were ANOVAs. For categorical variables, you'll see proportions and chi-square. Before we move to the tables, here's the actual rate of pregnancy. So the national rate, these are all CDC estimates. The national rate is about 7.1% for teen pregnancies among age 15 to 19. That was the closest to our 16 to 20 age range that I could find. 12.7% for African Americans and Latina adolescents, so a bit higher. And then here, 17.8% is all just among all of the female-born participants in our sample, and then it jumps to 25% if you just look at those that were sexually active. Okay, so here's our first table. Age and race, ethnicity was not related to pregnancy, but those whose mothers had less education were more likely to report a history of pregnancy. And they were less likely to be a student themselves. And unfortunately, parent education was the closest we could come to measuring SES. It's kind of one of the variables that's correlated with SES, but we didn't really have any other measures. Because this was kind of an existing sample that we then looked at pregnancy, we didn't design the study specifically to look at it. And then here are the individual level variables. Those with a history of pregnancy were about a year younger at age of first menarche, so 11 versus 12. No differences in their age of sexual debut, either with a same or opposite partner. no differences in condom use in the past 6 months, but that could have been something that changed maybe after they had had the pregnancy, so we can't be sure about that. No differences in MDD symptoms, so that's symptoms of major depression, but we do see higher rates of impulsivity, higher number of conduct disorder symptoms, and about half of the sample that had reported a pregnancy had also reported being arrested at some point. And then here we see the social support factors. So those that reported a history of pregnancy had reduced family support and somewhat smaller peer support, but that wasn't significant. Again, unfortunately, since it's cross-sectional, we don't know which came first or if the reduced family support is a result of the pregnancy in some way. And then here, the LGBTQ-specific factors. So no difference in age first attracted to either the same or the other sex, and age first thought one might be LGB. There wasn't a difference in actual attractions. Whether you reported attractions to the opposite sex or not, you seem to be at the same level of risk. Sexual orientation identity was not significant, but I have a slide coming up next where we'll look at that a little more closely. We do see an effect for lifetime LGBT-related victimization, and that's ever being, I think it's being harassed, being called names, being threatened. So that's what the victimization was. But then when you look at LGBT-related sexual assault, that was actually one of the strongest predictors that we found of having reported a history of pregnancy. What these youth said about their gender nonconformity in childhood did not relate, so we thought maybe, oh, it's, you know, the more feminine. So we did find that their current levels of femininity were related to pregnancy, so more reporting that you're more feminine currently was related to pregnancy, but not in childhood, and not your level of masculinity. Okay, so here you can see the actual identities. So if you look at those that did report a history of pregnancy, it looks like they're more likely to be bisexual. They're kind of split between being bisexual and lesbian, maybe a little bit more bisexual. And then that small part at the end is the questioning unsure group. And it looks like more lesbian and gay identified and then never been pregnant. Okay. So I also wanted to include a few open-ended responses because I started looking through these. We actually added these at a later wave. We asked the question, was the pregnancy related at all to your LGBT status? So of course, if it's some sort of like unconscious link, then we wouldn't necessarily know, but I think they talked about some interesting factors. So some said, you know, my sexual orientation was not a factor. So they said, this one person said, I feel like I know what I like. I like men and women. I feel like I'm going to enjoy both regardless. The difference is one can get you pregnant and one can't. A few talked about the fluidity of sexuality. So they said, one person said, I was very attracted to his very slighted feminine shape. A few confirmed this finding we had with sexual assault. So someone said, I wish I had sought out services or help from a therapist to help deal with the traumatic events that took place in my life around that time. Definitely there are scars that remain from those events. And something new that we didn't measure was this internalized homophobia. So someone said, we both had same-sex tendencies and we were trying to run from it. Or denial is what got me curious. I felt weird about women and didn't want it at first. And then lastly, we asked what kinds of services would you wish that you had had, if any? And here we got some longer responses. So one person said, you know, when I was 14 and became pregnant, I definitely wish I had help getting an abortion. I know that sounds terrible, but I truly wish I had the support and resources necessary to get one. I was a homeless runaway in Chicago. I ran away from abusive circumstances, and no clinic I went to could help me. Another said, I wish I had not been cut off Medicaid. I received prenatal care late, and I went to a neglectful prenatal clinic. which ultimately, in my opinion, led to my twins being extremely premature and their untimely deaths. So again, pretty catastrophic impact of lack of services. Okay. So where do we go from here? In terms of additional research, more longitudinal studies are necessary. We are doing some longitudinal analysis right now in terms of predicting new pregnancies over the follow-up period that we do have. But it was interesting to note that among those that were sexually active, or even among those that weren't, just looking at the whole sample, there's a high rate at age 16 to 20. So we really need studies that start at early ages if we want to look over time. And you know, this is a diverse population, so there might be predictors in certain communities but not in others. So looking at that within group variability and including more detailed measures about abuse and also potentially internalized homophobia. The second area is the outcome of pregnancies. I did take a look at this. We did ask some questions about this, and it looked very similar to the national outcome data in terms of do youth get abortions, do they have the child, is there a miscarriage. That all seemed fairly similar, but it looked like these youth might be getting less support for raising the children, and that's financial support and social support. Third, in these kind of large school-based studies, males that are attracted to the same sex were also at higher risk of impregnating someone else. So we did run the same set of analyses for the males in our study, and interestingly, getting someone pregnant was associated with more attractions to the opposite sex and more gender conformity. So those that were more gender nonconforming were more likely to have reported that they got someone else pregnant, but it wasn't related to trauma or any of these other factors that we found here. So it seems to be operating in different ways within sexual minorities, depending on birth sex. So what are the implications of these findings? First, I think one thing that is encouraging is that even if you're not targeting pregnancy directly, some of the interventions that are being developed these days to target LGBT victimization, to target family rejection, hopefully that will also bring down the rate of pregnancy. And perhaps there's a way to incorporate some component of pregnancy prevention into some of those interventions. But we do also know that a lot of these outcomes do cluster together. So targeting those that are at high risk for this cluster of abuse and trauma and acting out behaviors are needed. And then I think it's important to also work with the folks who are out there working with youth that are at risk of pregnancy, using pregnancy-related services, or in need of parenting support, and perhaps try and work with them to increase their LGBT cultural sensitivity so that they're not so shocked when I talk to them and they're like, what? If there's this higher rates, we need to educate. So that's all I have for today. I'm happy to share the slides with anyone that's interested. I forgot to put my email address on here, but I'll stick around after the presentation. And please check out our website, impactprogram.org. We're really marketing it as a resource for youth. We have information about how to use condoms, how to talk about safe sex, that sort of thing. So it's out there on our website. Thanks.